Shall we proceed to chapter 2? This is called the Purusha Shukta, the song in praise of the Purusha. Remember, Puru Isha Iti Purusha. Puru means full, complete, perfect, purn. And Isha means the seer or the ruler, the full, complete, and perfect seer or ruler or consciousness of all is the Purusha. And this is a hymn to him. Page 36, chapter 2, praise to Om. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness has 1,000 heads, 1,000 eyes, 1,000 feet. That means innumerable. He pervades the earth and the space on every side, while he manifests in all aspects of the world of 10, the Shangulam, the place of 10 fingers, like the heart, or the world comprised of earth, water, fire, air, ether, smell, taste, sight, touch, sound. Or you can say he lives in all that is perceivable in all the senses and all the objects of the senses. You can say he lives in the 10 directions. Everywhere. So he has innumerable heads, innumerable arms, innumerable feet, and he resides everywhere. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness alone has given birth to all that has become and all that will become. From him comes all that is and all that dwells in immortal bliss. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness demonstrates his greatness in the perceivable and the imperceivable. The entire universe is his one part, while three parts exist in the divinity of the nectar of immortal bliss. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness rises in the three parts above, while with the one part he creates the entire creation again and again and resides within. Here we have three parts of him are invisible and unmanifest. And with just one part of him, he creates all the manifested existence. We're only perceiving just the smallest part of him, and he dwells within that part. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness is the eternal master. He created the vast existence, and thereafter the land. And then he created yajna, the sacrifice of attachment to duality through attentive offering. And then the animals of the forest, those who fly with the wind, and those who live in villages. So first he created land, and then he created yajna. And we're calling yajna the sacrifice of selfishness. Union, yuj, to unite. Yajna comes from the root yuj, to unite. A yajna is union through the sacrifice of selfish attachment. Attachment to this world of duality. And then the animals of the forest and those who fly with the wind and those who live in the villages. And then from yajna, hymns and songs and poetic meters became known. And then the Veda of sacrifice came forth. Then came both horses and cows and all beings that take birth. The gods, pure beings and rishis know him, the one who knows all, the full, complete, and perfect consciousness, by demonstrating respect in the yajna of sacrificial offerings. So the gods know the supreme Purusha, the full, complete, and perfect consciousness, by demonstrating their respect in the yajna of sacrificial offerings. I see some question marks.
You get a fuller explanation. It's pretty complex.
He is only known through sadhana. And the sadhana is demonstrating respect. And the demonstration of respect is sacrificing selfish attachment. And that's what the verse means.
How does yajna, you talking about the fire sacrifice?
That's one part of sacrifice. We're talking about the greater yajna, yuj, to unite, the union with God through the action of sacrificing selfish attachments. So the gods and pure beings and the rishis, everyone who knows him, that purusha, they know that full and complete and perfect consciousness by demonstrating respect. Remember, we define respect as Shri, Shanti, in your mind and in your heart. The perfection of peace in your mind, in your heart, is offering respect. And that offering of respect in the yajna is sacrificing all of our selfish attachments by paying attention.
Is the creation of that sacrifice God's creation?
Yes.
How that was first come about?
He first created the land and then he created the yajna. First came the land and then the yajna. The land gave up its selfish attachment and allowed the beings to dwell on it. It gave up all its selfishness. The full, complete, and perfect consciousness is so diverse. How varied are his descriptions? Who is represented by the head? Who by the arms? Who by the feet? From his head came the knowers of wisdom. From his arms, kings and administrators. From his thighs came forth those of circulation and distribution. And from his feet, support and sustenance. And there's a footnote there. The Purusha, the Supreme Being, is the full and complete body of existence. Puru means full, complete, perfect. Isha means Lord or ruler, seer. Thus, the seer of perfection or the perfect Lord. He requires every function in order to sustain himself. A central nervous system or intellect. An administrative or defense system. And circulatory and nourishment systems. This makes him full and complete as an integrated whole. The verse does not mean that children born in a Brahmin family are higher than others, as so often it is interpreted. Rather, it shows that the Purusha performs every function and any man wishing perfection must emulate his perfect nature. So therefore, in order for any organism to subsist, we need an intelligence. We need a defense system, an immune system. We need a circulatory system. We need servants to bring nourishment into the society and to take away the refuse. Now, you need that in a human body. You need that in any body. And you need it in the body of society. So here the verse is saying that these four distinct orders, these four different functions, are all encompassed within the Purusha. His mind gave birth to the moon, and his eyes gave birth to the sun. From his ears and his breath came the wind, and from his mouth came the Lord of fire. From his navel came forth the atmosphere, and from his head the heavens. From his feet came the earth, and from his ears the directions. Thus existence became manifest. The gods perform sacrifice with that supreme being as the offering. They offered up all their consciousness. They offered their full, complete, undivided attention. Spring was the clarified butter oil. Summer, the fuel. Autumn, the oblation. Seven were the limitations defined. Bhur, Bhuva, Sva, Paha, Janaha, Tapa, Satyam. Three times seven, the ingredients used. When the gods offered that sacrifice, they bound their animalistic nature and offered it to the Supreme Being. all their animalism, all the responses of life that come from lower chakras. They bound all of their worldly attachments and offered that as the offering to the Supreme Being. There's a footnote here. Let's take a look at that. There are many possibilities for the seven limitations defined, Purbhuvaswaha, and also the gross perception, the subtle perception, intuitive perception, the cosmic body of nature, the body of universal knowledge, Om the body of light, Om the ultimate truth, consciousness, and bliss. And other possible interpretations are the seven meters, the seven levels of heaven and hell, or for that matter, all of the various attributes classified by seven. So seven were the limitations defined. And they were all offered up to that Supreme Being. By sacrifice, the gods gave birth to sacrifice. And the first principles of eternal dharma, the ideals of perfection, were established. Those who live according to the glorious way ultimately reach the highest abode where the gods dwell in that ancient perfection. In the beginning, the doer of all distinguished the earth from the waters. Then the Creator gave the knowledge to distinguish the mortal world of humans from the immortal world of the gods. I know this full, complete, and perfect consciousness, whose greatness is the color of the sun without darkness. Only those who know this are free from death. There is no other path by which liberation is known. The Lord of all beings born enters all souls within the womb, and the Eternal assumes all forms within the creation. Those who know the Supreme continually look to the divine within, which is established in all existence. That Supreme Lord illuminates the shining gods and goes before the gods in their every endeavor. We continually bow with respect to that illuminated Supreme Divinity who took birth before the gods. Those whose lives are illuminated with the rise of the radiance of divine light joyously proclaim, "The gods are bound to serve those who know the Supreme Divinity in this form, the one indivisible being." Wow. They are bound to serve those who know him. They're obligated. Even the gods have to serve the knowers of the Purusha. And that's why when she just winks, she mobilizes armies. The gods themselves are obligated to serve those who know that Supreme Purusha. And that is you. I know that Supreme Being. All of us can say that. He dwells within us all. He has become us all. We are the manifestations of that Supreme Divinity. How can we not know the essence of our own being? Only from time to time, occasionally, we forget. Om, the highest respect to you, goal of all existence, wife of the full and complete divinity, the night, the unknowable one, at whose sides are the stars and who has the form of the relentless search for truth. O Supreme Divinity, my Supreme Divinity, all existence is my Supreme Divinity. Oh, thus ends the second chapter. Are there any questions? Please.
I truly did not understand all the metaphors of the sun and the moon and the wind and
It all came forth from this Purush. Remember our 36 tattvas of Tantra. We begin with Sadashiva, infinite consciousness, unbound, unlimited. Shakti, who is totality of energy. Ishwara. Purush and Prakriti united. Shiva and Shakti as one being are the Narishwar. He's half Nar or half Nari. That is the union with consciousness and nature, or consciousness and energy. Then comes Shudvidya. Remember Shiva just barely opening his eyes, saying, there may be something outside. Maya. Yes, there's something outside. Then comes Panchkanchuk. These are the limitations of consciousness, because consciousness perceives through modes of perception of time, space, attribute, knowledge, and activity. Kal, Niyati, Raga, Vidya, and Kala. And that is Purush. That gives birth to the Purush, that full, complete, perfect perceiving capacity, that consciousness which is manifest in existence. Now comes the body of Prakriti. And remember, Prakriti is the totality of all possibilities to manifest in this creation. So here comes, from the Purush comes the sun and the moon and stars and the earth and the land. All is coming forth from him. From his consciousness. All is coming forth. All existence. And he enters within all existence as he creates it. And he dwells inside. And who sees this Purush everywhere. That individual, even the gods are obligated to serve them. Even the gods are bound to be with those who see the Purush everywhere, because their every action is a sacrifice. There is no selfish attachment. So their every action is a sacrifice. And that's why the gods must serve, aid and abet the knower of the Purush. And then the chapter goes on to say, I am that Purush. He has become all of this. He has become me too. And how can I forget the essence of my own being, who is always with me? That is my true self. And that's what this Purush Shukta is telling. He has 1,000 heads and 1,000 eyes and 1,000 arms and 1,000 feet. And this is just the smallest portion of him. He's manifest everywhere. And who perceives divinity in every aspect of creation, they know the Purusha. Are there other questions here?
Yes.
Please.
I think the sacrifice in this book, does it have another meaning than the usual sacrifice used?
It has many meanings. One yajna, or sacrifice, is offered in the fire. Huh? When we say swaha, and we do the yajna, there's another sacrifice when we do karma without selfishness. When we give up all of our own selfish desires and attachments, and then we make a sacrifice through karma. There's also gyan yajna, when we make a sacrifice of wisdom and we share our wisdom without any desire to get anything for ourselves but more wisdom. There are many kinds of sacrifice. So those are many sacrifices that are being spoken of in this book. Good question. Are there other questions? Yes, please.
In verse 17, the doer of all distinguished the earth from the waters. Does it mean earth as duality and the waters as wholeness of consciousness, or does it mean physical earth and waters?
Both. The scripture is relevant and applicable on seven levels of consciousness. So it is true he separated physical water from physical land, and it's also true he separated the waters of universality of consciousness from the land of manifested duality. Both are true.
If this full realization came through at every moment, I mean, you'd never stop praising. You'd just be a basket case.
Not a basket case.
I think I'd be crazy.
Oh, yeah, crazy in terms of the world, but not in terms of God. Mm-hmm. And certainly when worldly people would look at you, they'd say, yeah, she doesn't want the same things we want. She must be crazy.
They're already saying that.
They're probably right from their point of view.
Yeah.
However, every action that we perform is part of that sacrifice. It doesn't mean that you stop acting.
Oh.
It means you stop acting with selfishness. There are two choices that we have. We can act for me or we can act for thee. And if we choose to act for God in every action, in every circumstance, then we are performing the yajna all the time. And we do what's right instead of what's convenient.
Action is the realization.
No,
can be.
The action can be is a manifestation of our realization. Whether we act for my personal gain, or do we act for my community, or do we act for our family of the universe. Yeah. Mother says that we achieve a degree of efficiency where we have removed the selfishness from our mind, and this is the function of the sacrifice. That's how a sacrifice functions, whether it's the sacrifice in fire. If you're doing a fire sacrifice, if it's really a yajna, you have no other thought except you, the fire, the text, your mind is submerged in the hymns and meters. And that efficiency determines the degree of yajna, of union, that you have achieved. Now, it's the same thing in any karma, in every action. The degree that we have divested ourselves of selfishness in that action, that is the degree of union that we achieve. It doesn't mean you'd be a basket case.
But you're an expression of the Purush.
We are the Purush. We are the expression of the Purush. Every action that we perform demonstrates that knowledge, either for or against. Yes, please.
Swami, I was just going to disagree. I don't think you'd be crazy. I think you'd be just the opposite. Because if that's true, if that's, you know, being in contact with the whole and acting on that point of view, then that's healthy. And that's sanity. Everything else is insane or not quite whole.
Spoken like a true psychiatrist. Would you please certify us all as healthy?
He's right.
He's right. Yes. However, if you go into the world and ask for a certificate, they'll say, you don't deserve a certificate. You are certifiable. I'm sending you to see Jimmy. I'm sending you right over to Nityananda's place because you don't want the same things that we want. And what we want is approved by society, and therefore you must be crazy. Because you don't want the same thing. What do you want, to sit on the top of a mountain with a bunch of hippies reading scriptures?
Yeah.
You must be crazy. Yes, Nitya.
Swamiji, is another way perhaps of saying the sacrifice of selfishness is really, you know, having the knowledge of who we really are, which is that constant sacrifice. Is that so?
Absolutely true. He says, I am this Purush. I know this full, complete, and perfect consciousness. I am this complete and full and perfect consciousness.
Because in living in that efficient way, aren't we aren't we all just by nature sacrificing,
to the extent that we're capable? Yes, doctor?
I'd also disagree with the idea of the world would see us as being crazy, because Buckminster Fuller was not seen as being crazy. In fact, he was seen as being one of the most illustrious contributors to progress that we've ever had. And he described becoming enlightened, when he was dropped out from Harvard. Maybe at that time they thought he was crazy, but once he started actually acting in a community-oriented way or non-selfish way, it was just the opposite.
I'm only speaking from personal experience.
You know, I think what I'm talking about is when the realization is not just in your mind. Like when Ramakrishna was one with everything, he was not in his mind.
He was out of his mind.
Well, that's kind of, if you want to call it crazy, but when he was in complete union with everything that was, and he saw God in everything, how could he function? I mean, he was beyond even caring about action at that moment.
And yet he functions sufficiently that around the world we've built temples to him and teach his teachings and share his message, because he functioned to a degree of efficiency, demonstrating the union with that Purusha that's beyond selfishness. That's why his photo adorns our walls and his image sits on our altars. Because he's functioned to such a degree of efficiency without any selfishness. And of course, his contemporaries called him crazy. And 100 years later, we've got temples to him all around the world. Those who are ignorant and only can understand their own desires, they would call another one crazy. But crazy by whose term? Certainly not by the standards that Dr. Nityananda is referring to. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha.